The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now we're joined by Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Luke, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we've a number of topics, but let's go straight into the statement that you made, that we could be looking at 100 deaths a day or higher if things go the way they're going at the moment. Explain.
Yeah, that's the absolute worst case scenario. We've got to hope it doesn't get to that, of course. It's a numbers game, as you know. Numbers of cases translate into hospital ICU, and then sadly, you know, we see deaths. But on the more positive side, the age profile is lower at the moment, remember. So younger people are in hospital, so therefore they're inclined to do better anyway. And as you know, Pat, they've got better at treating patients. But that's the worst scenario. And of course, the HSE would be very well aware of that and wouldn't want those kind of death rates. We've got to keep our fingers crossed, really, in these next few days.
Now, one of the topics you want to cover this morning is the question of whether or not having had COVID-19 might even be better than getting the vaccine. Explain.
Yeah, there's a really good study, Pat. Now, my colleague Kingston Mills, who I know you've had on, he's been speaking about this a lot, and he sent it to me initially, actually. It's a New England Journal of Medicine paper, which is really compelling. It was done in Oxford. Oxford seemed to be leading the way in many ways. And they looked at people in a hospital setting, healthcare workers mainly. Over 12,000 were monitored. And then they noticed the ones who'd had infection before, they had high antibodies, they didn't get reinfected in a six-month period. Whereas obviously the ones who hadn't been infected, they picked up infections more readily. So it's a very good study that sort of really strongly suggests if you've been infected, there's a very low risk of reinfection. Nobody, Pat, in the infected group got infected again, which means it was better than the vaccine, if you see what I mean. Like the vaccine would give, say, 90% protection. But in this case, infection gave 100% protection in that group of people. So it's a really positive sign. And we wonder this for, as you may remember, for months, would infection protect you? And there was indications of reinfection, remember, out there, but they were rare. And now this study really does suggest that being infected could well protect you for quite a while.
Yeah. Now, what about the connection with SARS and what that might allow us to, the conclusion it might allow us to draw?
Yeah, there's another study. It was a good week for this, Pat, in a sense, because there was a study in California when they looked very closely at people who had been infected. 185 people were monitored very closely for months, and they measured antibodies and T cells and B cells. They're the key immune components, of course, that we need. And yet again, there was high levels of antibody. Antibody was falling off a bit over time, it must be said. But the B cells, the cells that make the antibody, they were persisting, and the T cells were persisting. You need T cells to help the B cells. And then there was a study on SARS where they were able to detect T cells 17 years after SARS infection. So these T cells were persisting for a very, they're called memory T cells, by the way. And again, that gives us hope, because here we have a similar disease. SARS is obviously in the same family as COVID-19. Years and years of T cells could be detected post-infection. So when you put those two studies together, it gives a very strong case that infection will mean you'll be protected, you know.
And yet, anecdotally, I had a call from someone the other day saying that they know two people who've got COVID-19 twice. So
yeah, well, that's the question, I suppose. I mean, the study so far, it's rare, thankfully. There will be some people who will get reinfected. They're pretty confident of that as well, by the way, but small numbers, basically. But the vast majority should be protected, is what these studies tell us.
From Susan, one of our News Talk texters: my sister in the UK had COVID in March with bad symptoms, but not hospitalised. She's in her mid-40s. Thankfully, she's fully recovered. She had a repeat antibody test in November as she was returning to work post-furlough. The results showed she had no antibodies left. Unfortunately, she doesn't know what antibody levels she had in March. Any comment from Professor O'Neill would be welcome, says Susan.
We're less worried about that. It's more the B cells, because remember, your body has these cells called B cells that make the antibodies. And when you're infected, those B cells expand and the numbers go up hugely. And then some become what I call memory B cells. And they can persist for years, you see. So it's more the B cell count that probably is more relevant than measuring the antibodies themselves. It makes sense, Pat, because otherwise your blood would be full of antibodies from every infection you've ever had. You know, you'd be churning with antibodies. So it's more the cells that become, I guess, memory cells. And then they're then mobilized when you get reinfected, and they make loads of antibody, then is the idea. So I wouldn't worry too much if antibody levels fall.
Now, people are concerned that it might lead to a second infection if it's the new strain. What's your thought on that, that the mutated strain might be reinfecting people who had been infected with the first version of COVID?
Yeah, that's a bit like the vaccine, I guess. Very unlikely, because you will have mounted a massive response to the virus, to lots of different parts of it. And even if that virus changes, there'll still be loads of other parts there that are still recognised by the immune system. So the chance of reinfection with another strain is extremely low.
Yeah, no, a couple of things that were contradictory. We had Killian de Gascoigne saying, you know, that there was a possibility that the new strain would not, the vaccine wouldn't be as effective. And yet Pfizer came out and said, absolutely, both against the South African variation and the UK variation, that the vaccine would work fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a slight unknown. I mean, we must be honest, there's a slim chance that maybe the vaccine wouldn't work against the new strain. But all the evidence at the moment suggests that it will. And Pfizer produced the evidence themselves. They could test their, you know, antibodies against the new strain, and they worked. You know, they took convalescent plasma, actually, from people who'd been infected with the old strain, if you like. And that worked against the new strain in a test tube. You know, that's pretty good evidence then that, you know, you should be OK in that regard. So I think at the moment, we're not worried about that. The vast majority of people would say the vaccine will work against this new strain. So I wouldn't be too concerned there for the moment. Of course, the risk is another strain might come along. So they're keeping a close eye on different strains emerging. But at the moment, the immune system is marvellously diverse, you see. So even if a piece of the virus changes, there's loads of other bits being recognised by the immune system. You know, and you can eliminate that new strain just as effectively then.
Now, the effect of the vaccine rollout on the situation in our hospitals, how soon would we see an impact on the number of people in hospital, the number of people in ICU?
Yeah, there's more and more studies, mainly in the UK, actually, trying to model this. In other words, if we get X number of people vaccinated, what will that mean? You know, and the first study last week was a very reassuring one, where if the top four groups are vaccinated, the death rate falls by 90%, which is a tremendous result, of course. And that study's holding up now. Other studies are confirming that. But the latest one is about decreasing people in hospital. And as you're just discussing, Pat, the massive pressure on the hospitals, you want to relieve that. And it's a very interesting study. So if you vaccinate 50% of the population, so the entire population, that has a massive effect on hospitalizations and ICU admissions. So to really impact on that pressure, you've got to get lots and lots of people vaccinated. In other words, we move down the priority groups to the lower priorities, and then you begin to see this big effect on hospitalization. And it's a question of time then, Pat. As soon as we can get these people vaccinated, you'll see an impact both on the death rate, most importantly, but secondly, equally, I suppose, is the rate of ICU admissions. It's a funny one, Pat, because the median age of people in the ICU in the UK is 62 now. So the age is getting younger. Do you know what I mean? So in other words, we need to get the vaccine into people younger than 62 and younger than 50, you know, to really begin to impact on those kinds of numbers.
Now, a question about the vaccine. And this News Talk texter, who's nameless, says, please explain to the public that vaccination does not mean people are clear of COVID. Vaccinated health workers could still be carriers and still pass on to patients. We don't know that, do we?
We don't. No, that's true. I mean, it's likely that the big question is, can you stop transmission? That's the big question that we still don't know the answer to fully yet. We know the AstraZeneca one might be better at that. And in fact, Moderna, the one that's coming online this week, there was some evidence that that might stop transmission. But there's no evidence for Pfizer yet. But at a minimum, you will decrease the amount of virus you pick up, you see. So even if you do pick up a tiny bit of virus, if you're vaccinated, there's less virus in your body anyway. So therefore, you're going to be transmitting a bit less, you see. That's the idea here. So that's becoming kind of less of a concern. But it is true at the moment, though, you still might be spreading it if you're vaccinated. But it should be at a much lower level is the idea.
Now, another texter, Anya, says, could you ask Luke, if you take dose one of one vaccine, would taking a second dose of another brand work?
It would. Yeah, that's done with other vaccines, by the way. And in fact, the Russian, the famous Sputnik V, the second shot is a different vaccine than the first one, both against SARS-CoV-2, of course, but it's different. So that's a possibility. The trouble is, there's no studies to show that scientifically, you see, like none of the trials did that. So therefore, they wouldn't recommend it at the moment. But they may well shift to that. And in fact, in the UK, they were talking about using AstraZeneca as a second shot after Pfizer, for instance. That's a work in progress, basically. But from an immunology point of view, a second shot of a different vaccine should work just as well, you know.
Was handed this by my wife, who got a text from one of her friends. Just listening to News Talk, our daughter-in-law, and I won't give her name, is in London, had the virus in March, antibody test in June, showed 100% antibodies, and over Christmas she got the virus again. So she just one unlucky woman.
That's right. There's a risk of that. See, it's not as if it's 100%. Like most things in biology, there's going to be variation, you know, and a small number of people sadly could get reinfected. But the studies we just mentioned shows that everybody in the Oxford study didn't get reinfected or had been, you know. So therefore, it's kind of an overall statistical thing, I guess. But there's a risk. Yeah, there's a tiny risk of reinfection if you've been infected.
Now, the question of the vaccine rollout. You know, we've got, 35,000 plus. Based on that English study, how quickly might we see some impact here? Because people are hoping we'll have an impact on hospital admissions very quickly. We're a bit off, aren't we, those first four groups being totally inoculated?
We have it. I mean, we need a million people in Ireland to be vaccinated to really reduce this death rate down to 10% of what it would be. You see, that's roughly the number that is being mentioned. And that's all the at-risk groups you see, and then the healthcare workers, the high-risk people, basically. And it's a million people. Interesting. These are people who might be younger with underlying conditions as well, of course, as older people. And then to go beyond that, then you need to get to 50% of the Irish population, is what this study I just mentioned would suggest, to have a huge impact on the hospitals and the ICU and all the rest of it. So we have to get to that. Our goal should be to get to the 80%, by the way. That's the golden number here for all over the world to really achieve this massive elimination, you know. But if we get to 50%, we're doing very well, because that will mean then we'll see a big impact on the various things we're talking about.
Another texter says, after testing positive, I hear that traces stay in your system, which could result in another positive test after months. How long does it take for the coronavirus really to leave your body?
That's a good question, Pakistan. It's remnants. They're called remnants. They remain. Now, they mightn't be infectious, but there'll be bits of virus that have persisted in some part of your body that's inactive, if you see what I mean. And that might crop up then in the test, for instance. And then there'll be a range. Some people might have chronic infection that goes on for weeks and maybe even months at a very low level, you know. So again, you'll always see a range in these things. That's again being worked on. For most people, you clear the thing within 2 weeks and it's gone. But a small number, it might persist a bit longer, you see. And that's something that people are trying to get their, you know, get more data on, I guess.
Yeah. And if you're asymptomatic and you test positive with the PCR test, perhaps you should be taking the antigen test, which will actually indicate the presence of activity,
virus.
Active virus. Yeah. Question, is it safe for my kids to use the playgrounds? I'm really torn about letting the kids out to play. That's from Don in Temple Oak.
Oh, let them out immediately. Yes, definitely, because the fresh air is great for a start. And these are very low risk places. We now know, yeah, as we've been discussing before, the main risk is indoors, close contact, someone who's infected, spread to someone else. So I wouldn't have any fear about using a playground.
Now, we've talked about how well the Australians and the New Zealanders have done. You have an example of what they've done in Brisbane, a quick lockdown, a kind of a circuit breaker. Why?
This is an amazing one. There's a guy called Frank Gannon, who anybody who knows about Science Foundation on might remember. He was a former director there, and he's living in Brisbane. And he sent me this on Friday, and it was amazing, and I looked into it a bit more. So in Brisbane, remember, the numbers there are extremely low. So Queensland has done very well. And they've got a single case she was a hotel worker who was working in one of the quarantine hotels in Brisbane, tested positive for the B117 strain, the one that was in the UK. And they immediately did a 72-hour circuit break lockdown in Brisbane, right? Now, what that meant was immediately everywhere was shut, you know, and everybody was told to stay home. They gave out the guidelines, max 2 visitors per house. And it was a 3-day called circuit breaker lockdown. They traced this person, and she'd had 79 close contacts, 689 movements, they call it. They could track where she was, and they could contact trace all those people. And it was amazing. The lockdown lifts today. Now, there was a way, Pat, to immediately stop spread. Can you believe in a single case that tested positive for that? Of course, it was a new strain that worried them a bit more because of the transmissibility of it. But to me, Frank said to me, no messing here is how he phrased it. You know, went in early and they went in hard. The premier is a woman called Anastasia Palaszczuk. And she said, we're going in hard and we're going in early to stop this in its tracks. You know, isn't that amazing? A single case triggered a 3-day level, effectively a level 5 lockdown like we have here, I guess.
Yeah, and if you disobey, $1,334 of a fine.
Yeah,
if you're caught outside the Brisbane area. God.
Exactly. So, like, if that was Dublin, if you drove into Wicklow, you get a huge fine. If you don't wear your mask in public, if people without masks on the street, a €200 on the spot fine. So they really go in hard, the Australians, sometimes there. And that was a really way to impose these restrictions, I guess.
And now a couple of questions about pregnancy. My fiance has been offered the vaccine. She works as a carer. We will try to start a family later this year. Is the current advice to hold off starting a family for a while after taking the vaccine or not? Would you advise that the vaccine be given or hold off for a while? And a number of questions like that.
Yeah, see, the trouble with that is it hasn't been tested in pregnancy yet, of course. You know, say pregnant women have not been vaccinated. There were some people on the Pfizer trial who were pregnant, though. And they were vaccinated and they were fine, you know, but there's been no kind of systematic analysis of that. I think it's probably safe enough to do. I definitely ask the advice, though, of the GP, just to be on the safe side, just to check things, you know. But at the moment, that's still a bit of a work in progress. But a lot of people are in that situation and they'd like clear answers. But at the moment, there's no data really on that, you know. But other vaccines are fine in that regard. So therefore, we would anticipate this one should be fine as well.
All right, Luke, thank you very much for joining us. Professor Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. And we'll talk to Luke later on in the week as developments come thick and fast.